Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech and language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler. I was waiting for the music to stop. I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist with the First Steps program in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you tonight, Laura?
I'm good, although I've been nursing sick children today. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, enjoying our pretty spring weather, and I'm happy to announce that it is officially 58 days until closing of my new house.
I said on the dream house. Go ahead.
Oh, that's it. Just that we locked it on a loan.
I saw it yesterday, and it's beautiful. Johnny and I were so excited to get to see it. It is just gorgeous. Dream house is an appropriate name for it.
Well, thank you. It's been a labor of love that I'm really ready to have over. So I'm excited to move in it, but I'm also excited to have it off of my proverbial plate. So. Not that it'll be done when I move there, but at least I'll be able to enjoy living there as I'm working on it. So, anyway, something fun to look forward to.
And I was thinking as we were walking through all the fun places you could sit and do the podcast from, so you'll have to have your official podcast location in your new home.
Well, you suggested one. I thought that was a good one. She was joking. I'd do it from my new big bathtub, which I might have to try sometime. So
that's so funny. I'm giddy because I'm sleep deprived. So let's just make the best of it. So,
okay.
All right.
Well, Laura, you had a big, big, big week. Let me just say that.
She
completed her first Kentucky Hearing and Speech Association conference. And she went from just a presenter to a headliner. I don't know that it was official, but she literally got bumped up to a bigger room and had a great response and turnout. So,
I know. People were on the floor. That was so exciting to me because that Johnny had said to me the day before, how will we know if we're well attended? And I said, people will be sitting on the floor and standing in the back, and then people will come in the back and not have a place to sit. And when all that happened, you know, it was just like, very excited. So it was so much fun, and we had a blast, and we were, you know, we had our booth in the exhibition hall, and we met some really cool people there. We were next to the people from Northern Speech Services and a really nice presenter named Kelly Richmond, who does this great program called Literacy Speaks. And again, it's too old and too advanced for our little guys. She's a school-age speech pathologist, but she was so nice, and Cheryl, the other person that worked in the booth with her, and so great, and Johnny and I just had the best time. We came home dog-tired, but we have lots of new ideas and just had the best time, and I got asked back for next year, and next year it's in Louisville, so that'll be exciting because it'll be the hometown crowd, so it was a fun, fun week. That was definitely on my bucket list, and I'm so happy that it happened so soon, and it was unexpected, and I just couldn't be more grateful for the opportunity. So it was a lot of fun. Thank you for asking about that.
Oh, it was a big, big deal, and we're all very proud of you for making it so quickly. I'm not surprised, but it was
to be invited and not have to do the whole call for papers and, you know, pray and cross your fingers and, you know, see if you're going to get accepted. It was nice to be invited.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very good. All right. We have some great questions for tonight. And we're going to start with one. Did you get the last email that I sent you about PECs?
Oh, no. I don't think I did.
Have you been in your email today?
No.
I'm going to start with that one. So this will be a surprise for you.
Okay.
And then the other ones were ones that I did send you earlier in the week from two moms.
Right.
So I want to be sure that we get to both of those because both of those moms have emailed me back a couple of different times and said, I'm going to be listening for your answer.
Couldn't get them to call us, eh? Come on, call us. Call us.
What is in Canada? And I think she was concerned about
that'd be expensive.
Time difference and everything. And then, you know, we forgot to do one from a couple of weeks ago. We didn't have a show last week because of the Super Bowl. And I like this question so much. Like, how do you find a good speech pathologist? How do you know who's good? Remember that question?
Right.
From a couple of weeks ago. Let's do nearly the whole show about that next week, because
okay.
I think that's a really important topic, and I know you have lots to say about that, and I do too. And so we'll talk about that next week, and I think that's worthy of, you know, kind of a week's notice and extra preparation beyond what we already do, ha, ha, ha. So we'll do that next week, how to pick a good speech pathologist for your child, or how to know
or the
if
top
you
10 reasons you'll the top 10 ways you'll know you do not have a very good speech therapist.
Well,
there
you go. Yeah, I'm glad I'm doing that one after I just spoke.
Yeah,
we'll keep it
in as positive a light as possible. But you know what, and I've even hate to admit it, but had a few kids over the years that I did not feel like I was necessarily the best speech therapist or the best developmental interventionist for, just because it wasn't necessarily the best fit, you know, and I could go into specifics,
right.
But even the best speech therapists occasionally run across a child that may be somebody else who is good but somehow different would be a better fit for. So
exactly.
We all have our strengths and our weaknesses.
Well, and if you specialize in one particular thing and you get a kid that doesn't really need that, it kind of makes sense to pass them off. I no longer take feeding kids and haven't taken feeding kids if that's their primary issue in years and years and years because I'm a language person.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just makes sense to kind of pass them off to
and there
a
are speech therapists
feeding.
Who do
yeah.
lots and lots of feeding,
right.
And that's their area of expertise, and it does make sense for them to see those kids because they're good at
sure.
it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that next week. Okay,
yeah.
Guess what? I think we have a caller.
Oh, yay. See, I'm glad I said that.
I know. Hi, caller. Are you there?
Hi.
Hello. Hello. You're on with Laura and Kate. What can we do for you?
Okay, I'm a first-time caller. And
okay, great.
I recently found out that my 2-year-old son has hearing loss in one of his ears, and
uh-huh.
I wanted to find out what your recommendation, if you have a recommendation for the best type of speech therapy, as far as if it's a prompt or Kaufman or any of those names that you would recommend for a hearing loss child.
Well, is your name Lisa? Because I think that's how it's popping up on the screen, but I don't want to call you Lisa if that's not your name.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Lisa, because he's 2, I would say anything that's a play-based approach. And did you say that he has apraxia or just hearing loss?
He's only been diagnosed with a hearing loss right now. He also has low muscle tone, too.
Okay. I was confused because you said Kaufman. And, you know, Nancy Kaufman is an apraxia expert, and lots of speech pathologists kind of take and use her methods even with children who aren't apraxic because they're so darn good and they work. So I just wanted to make sure that I asked that question to see if he had hearing loss and apraxia or what. But I would say, because of his age, get a good speech pathologist who is skilled in treating babies. That would be your primary qualifier, finding someone who loves what she does and loves playing with 2-year-olds. And, you know, hearing loss in one ear, while parents sometimes really, really kind of freak out about that, the 5 or 6 children that I've had with that diagnosis over the years all did great. And they all made pretty quick progress once we kind of got the play-based approach going and got them really, you know, and some of them started with signing, and, you know, even my children with perfect hearing start with signs, so don't let that freak you out. And I know there are many, many programs that say for children with any amount of hearing loss, even if they're almost completely hearing impaired, you know, they're only going to do an oral approach and not use any signs. And I kind of understand where they're coming from, but, you know, my philosophy is I use signs with everybody, you know, to kind of get that symbolic communication going and that, you know, intentional, I have to do something to get something piece going. And so I would think that those would be your most important features, not necessarily a certain program per se. Do you have someone directing you toward a certain program, or were you just calling to kind of ask?
We currently have a speech therapist, and we've tried, you know, different programs like the oral motor program for his low muscle tone. But I just kind of wanted to see if there was one type of program that you felt was better for either hearing impaired students or the 2-year-old category. So.
Yeah, how did your what did you guys do for oral motor, and how successful was that?
You know, the Whipple hierarchy has been wonderful, and I encourage all parents to do that. I think it's important as a parent to see the to see how each whistle goes with a different sound, and that some of the some of the whistles parents can even buy from like the dollar store or Walmart. I know it's not supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be a particular one, but we've done that whistle hierarchy and has been real pleased. We've tried the massages as well and some chewing techniques.
And is he saying more words because of all those things, Lisa?
I don't, you know, he's saying he is progressing, but not as.
This is my opinion on that. I think that, you know, I'm not saying that oral motor in and of itself is harmful to any child, but the studies really say if you want a kid to talk, you better work on talking. And so you're going to need to get a real language-based approach going. And, yes, I understand why a kid with a low muscle tone. Boy, we can hear him in the background now.
He's trying to say he's all done.
He's trying to say all done?
Yes.
Oh,
that's funny. You know, a lot of therapists will do, you know, and I certainly haven't seen your little boy and, you know, don't know the extent of his muscle tone issues, but a lot of therapists will kind of start there at the beginning, and I'm certainly not arguing with that because that could have been certainly what would have been the very best thing for him to do. But I tell you, I'm such a language person that I go straight for strategies that will get his language going. And once you get language going, then you can kind of address all these other issues that happen. But unless a kid really starts to learn that I've got to find ways to communicate with my mommy, be it through signs, through early words, whatever, it really doesn't matter if that tone improves or not. Do you see what I'm saying? And I know that that's, again, I bet there's speech pathologists listening to the show right now who are cringing. They can't believe that I said that out loud. But it's truly how I feel about that. You've got to get, even with a great oral motor program in place, you've still got to get the language facilitation strategies going too, because words are what your ultimate goal is. It's not, you know, you want his tone to improve, and that's great. And overall, that will significantly help his feeding, and if he had any feeding issues, and possibly really help his intelligibility. However, unless he has the words to say, it really doesn't matter that you addressed all those other stuff, all that other stuff. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And I'm certainly not knocking your therapist. Please don't think that. I'm just saying you got to get the language stuff going too, or then he may be able to talk but have nothing to talk about. And that's the whole reason that we learn to communicate, is to use words to change our worlds, to tell mommy what we want, to tell mommy what we don't want, to be able to have a little conversation with you about what's cool or what's yucky or whatever. So to get that language stuff going is going to be your primary goal. So how many words does he have now, Lisa?
I would say he has maybe 7 or 8 words.
And how many? Two?
Two, yes.
Is that what you said?
How many months is he, Lisa? How far away from two? When was his birthday?
Let's see, September, so almost 6 months.
Two and a half. Yeah. Are you guys signing?
Yes. And we just recently found out that he had hearing loss in one ear as well.
Yeah. And did your person think that was the reason that he's been a little slower to talk than she would have normally expected, in addition to the low tone?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so, too. How's his receptive language? How's he following directions for you and understanding?
Yes, it's perfect and receptive.
Okay, well, see, if he has perfect receptive language, then hearing isn't really an issue, is it?
No.
Not really. Because if that were severe, now, again, intelligibility down the road, he might not be able to hear some of those sounds, you know, depending on the shape of his configuration, if it's audiogram, you know, how that hearing test really looked, he might, frequency-wise, he might not be able to hear some of those sounds. But if his receptive language is really good, then hearing probably isn't the reason that he's not saying more words than he's saying. Because, again, you know, cognitively and receptive language-wise, he's there. If he's following directions for you, if he's what other kinds of things can he do? Is he pointing to things when you ask him, you know, or give him a direction like go get the ball, find your truck?
Yeah, he can follow two-step, three-step directions. And you know, and that's what I kind of really pushed the hearing evaluation, because he was so good receptively that I didn't understand why the expressive language was such a delay. And,
right. And they feel like it was really related to the hearing loss. Is that what they told you?
Yes, that's what they told me as of right now. Yeah. I know that they're kind of reluctant to tell me too much because of his age. I don't know if that's just, you know, my speech pathologist or therapist in general, but we're just kind of at a, I guess, a standstill with that.
So when you say, Lisa, he has seven words, is that seven words that he uses on his own to communicate? Is that seven words that he'll say even when you model a word for him? Is that, how do you define that seven words?
Those are seven words that he says on his own.
On his own.
Yes, ma'am. He will imitate words fairly well,
mm-hmm.
some words better than others.
Yeah.
He's doing a lot of that. And I've even started now trying to do some vitamins with them, like the fish oils and some of their whole food methods, too. So
right.
We'll see how, you know, I'm just willing to try anything.
Lisa, have you been to my website at teachmetotalk.com?
Just briefly, just to look at the blog.
Okay. Have you ordered the DVDs, Teach Me
no.
to Talk? Did you say no?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I'm going to send you one because I think, and as my gift for calling in, because we haven't had a caller in so long, because I usually, if you can really kind of get kids to do over that hump of really wanting to play with you and have it be really fun and really imitate kind of in that high energy affect kind of way in the context, and I can hear them in the background, usually that's of the piece that's missing in lots of speech therapy sessions with babies. And again, I don't know your therapist. I don't know what you've been doing. You know, I don't know any of that. I'm just saying that that's really successful is targeting language and play like that. And you sound like you're just looking for any kind of solution that that might kind of help get him over the hump. So let me send this to you.
Okay.
And you can email me at and give me your address. And through the email, and I will be glad to get that out to you. Because how are your therapy sessions looking? Are you mostly focused on the oral motor stuff and things like that right now?
We're doing the oral motor. I didn't hear the question all the way, but
he's mad.
My husband's working, so I would put him somewhere, but
that's okay. We're used to crying, kids. This is nothing.
Yeah. But
are you guys targeting lots of language in play, Lisa?
Yes, we're trying to, and he's also in preschool too.
He's in what?
Preschool.
We're in preschool too, so
preschool.
I'm hoping that he's getting some communication there too.
Okay, good. Well, listen, I'm going to send you the DVD because I want you to kind of see the things that Kate and I talk about every week here, being really, really playful, helping kids. Again, you say that he's imitating, but kind of bumping that up a little bit so that he has to use it to really request to get the things that he wants. And then hopefully you'll be able to get some language going from there. But it sounds like you've covered your bases. You know, you've certainly got his hearing tested and found out there's a problem. But I don't want you to be overly concerned about that at this point, because generally kids do okay with hearing loss in one ear. And I hope that you've gotten kind of that positive response. I'm not saying that he won't ever have a problem because of that, or that he might not need some special accommodations academically down the road. But all in all, kids tend to, you know, once you get the right language strategies in place, you know, that tends to improve pretty quickly and get going. And again, your therapist just felt like that muscle tone was a significant contributor to why he's not talking, so she's gotten some strategies in place for that. So again, you've done the foundation, so now I think if you can just bump it up a little bit,
yeah.
Hopefully things will fall into place. So let me just, you email me, it's Laura@teachmetotalk.com.
Okay.
I will send you that DVD. You take a look at that, and then I want you to go on the website and really read in the expressive category with some of those ideas about how to, again, bump it up a little bit with making and requesting something that he has to really do a lot in the context of play and the things that you guys do at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet that you'll see a marked improvement there. Kate, okay. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No, not really. You're going to send her Teach Me to Talk?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it does sound like they have the foundation set and that he has really the prerequisite skills to be making very nice, strong. Anytime a child's receptive language skills are very good, that makes me think, we have a lot to work with here. There may be some other things
right.
going on, but, you know, cognitively he's looking good and receptive language-wise goes hand in hand with that. So, I think Laura's absolutely right. It'd be a very, very play-based approach, which I think those would come to, it would be hard to do too much Kaufman, I think, really play-based. And what was the other one?
She's just
oh, prompt. Yeah, again, those are very, really structured, regimented approaches to speech therapy. And my line that I use with families all the time is you can't fix it until you're there doing it. And by that I mean if he's not talking at least very close to age level, which even though his receptive language skills are very good, his expressive language skills are pretty delayed if he's using 7 words spontaneously at 2.5. So really you need to fix that. You need to get that up to or very close to age level. And then be concerned about the quality of the communication or language. You know what I mean? Because...
Yeah.
To me, you can't fix it if he's not doing it, you know.
And
yeah,
what she means by that is lots of therapists will say, gosh, I'm going to work on sounds first. But our philosophy is really different. We work on words first. And then if you have to go back and kind of get the right sounds in the right places, that's great. But if he's not really trying, that's what I said about, you know, if you have him ready to talk but there's nothing to talk about, you know, cool. He doesn't have lots and lots of word approximations. You know, Kate's point is you can't really fix it, the sounds if he's not saying it yet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
One of the things, like, for example, he's not able to imitate all of his vowels, at least the short sound vowels. And that's like a concern of mine because that, from what the reading I'm seeing, is that they would have their vowels by this point.
Yeah. And so does his therapist, because she's using some prompt and because she's using some Kaufman, she thinks he's apraxic too. She's just using those, but she's never really officially said that.
Yeah, I don't think that she believes that he is apraxic. At least she hasn't voiced that to me, but she's also voiced that she felt like he was too young to even present that, I guess.
Yeah. And a lot of speech pathologists feel that way because the whole professional line, especially a few years ago, was we're not going to call a kid apraxic until after he's 3.
Okay.
So a lot of speech pathologists really won't talk about a specific diagnosis like that for under 3, but it's interesting that she's having you do, that you're doing some prompt and some Kaufman, which are both really recognized as apraxia treatment methods. So she must be thinking that there's some motor planning stuff going on too. Okay, in that case, instead of just sending you Teach Me to Talk, I'm probably going to send you Teach Me to Talk for the apraxia. And Kate, is that what you were trying to get me to say?
Yes. Ding, ding, ding. We have a winner.
I know. I'm a little bit distracted because I'm trying to navigate the switchboard. We have some people that seem like they're calling and then hanging up and calling and hanging up. And that's
stressful
to me.
Well, keep calling. We love callers.
So
yeah, that is kind of what I was wondering.
That. Yeah. But the reason that I would want you to do the first part of that, Lisa, the teach me to talk, is because I think that really gets parents going in the right direction. But this needs to be about fun, and this needs to be about communicating rather than anything
else. How many specific vowel sounds he can make. If you know, that's what I mean. You've got to get him using the words with those vowel sounds to motivate him to keep talking. Because at the end of the day, the only thing that really makes talking better is more talking.
Okay.
You know? So you've got to get him talking more. Literally, with more, you know, with word approximations and not just sounds, and he will make much faster progress. But, you know, he has a lot of good things to work with.
Yeah.
Good. Now, if I have it more clear as far as the hearing test goes, he'll have to take an ABR. Will that give me more insight as to if he's hearing the sound?
Yes, and they want to do an ABR because they don't feel like they got a good sound field test. Is that what they said? They're not sure he has hearing loss, or they told you that he has hearing loss. They're just not quite sure how serious it is. Is that why they want you to do a follow-up ABR?
Yeah, he failed the screening part. He tried the booth part but wasn't very cooperative. But failed the screening part. So in order to do, I guess, to get a better reading, they're going forth with the ABR.
Yeah, and they're going to want to do that because they're going to put a hearing aid on him if it's more severe, right? Is that what they're telling you?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Well, then you'll want to go ahead and do the ABR if they're not sure, you know, and if they're still thinks that there could be a chance for him to have a more severe loss than what they've identified. Some parents are reluctant to do the ABR because they're concerned about the effects of anesthesia and those kinds of things, and you'll just have to talk to your doctor and make that decision on your own as to whether... you know, whether you want to do that. And if they feel like his hearing aid, if they're doing the ABR for the purpose of determining if he needs a hearing aid or not, you know, you're going to want to go ahead and follow through with that because you don't want to wait, you know, 2 or 3 years on that if they feel like that's really warranted. And usually they don't make that recommendation unless they, you know, again, they felt like that they couldn't get a really good idea of you know, what was going on and be able to decide, you know, what kind of hearing aid he needs or, you know, even if they even got a good read in the first place. So, yeah, that would probably be something that I would, you know, talk with you about if I were your therapist. Is your speech pathologist encouraging you to follow through with that?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, and we've decided that we will.
Yeah, and more information is always good. But I tell you, from what it sounds like to me, Lisa, and again, I haven't seen your little boy, you know, haven't talked to you before today, so I'm just basing all this on a little bit of information that we're able to get on a phone call. Even when you get the hearing taken care of, you're still going to want all these other things in place, you know, to be able to work with him. Because, again, if his receptive language is completely normal, that tells you that he's heard well enough to learn what words mean and to follow commands.
Right.
So there's probably another little piece that you're missing there. And I think your therapist is trying like mad to address it with going for the oral motor stuff and targeting apraxia. She's doing, you know, several different things, but sometimes it's just kind of a matter of how you present it all and how you approach a two-year-old rather than doing things that might be really, really kind of more structured and more clinically based rather than just having it be about fun and communicating.
Yeah.
And again, I haven't seen your therapy sessions, so I don't know. You guys may be doing that already, but that's often the piece that's missing.
Yeah.
Sounds like telling you're doing the monkey sound.
Yeah. He wants up. He thinks. One of the things that we found is that Skype is great with families to do the video Skype because it gives them much motivation to talk over the computer.
Yeah. And so now he's trying to Skype us and we're not on Skype, right? Well, you would not want to see me right now, let me tell you. So it is a good thing we are not Skyping.
That is where I draw the line, Laura. I'm not doing Skype.
Well, Lisa, it sounds like he's trying to talk.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like, and you know, honestly, just kind of hearing him with his vocalizations, he's got some vowels. you know. Okay. Everything's not
Yeah.
And he may not have all the vowels, but you're gonna, if you can get that whole kind of communication piece going where he's really trying to imitate more real words,
mm-hmm.
I think you'll see some of that other stuff fall into place.
Okay, great. And I will email you, and I appreciate the DVD.
Enjoy the DVD. You'll
thanks
learn a lot.
For calling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Fun,
all
a
right.
caller.
I know. Well, I know those other two moms are going to be upset because we're not going to get to their letters tonight, but that's okay. We'll get those next week. I'm glad she called about that, and I want to kind of clarify some things I said. First of all, I hope I don't get any nasty grams from a speech pathologist telling me don't bash oral motor because, again, I haven't seen that kid, and I don't know exactly, you know, why a person – you know, why any what his treatment plan would be because I haven't seen him. But we have to target, like you said, Kate, you've got to really target those words first to know what you have to fix and how he's going to sound. And it is concerning that he doesn't have a lot of vowels. You know, there are some markers for some motor planning issues, and his therapist has obviously seen that because if she's doing prompt and if she's doing some Kaufman stuff,
mm-hmm.
That's what she's thinking. But just listening to that mom talk about and use all those really fancy names for those different approaches,
right.
and
the
have
whistle.
Kind of
oh.
Yeah, and have a real clinical explanation for what they're doing in speech. I didn't really hear that they were having fun. Did you?
No. It didn't. I mean, I don't know. Like you said, we don't know because we don't know the therapist and we don't know the child and we don't know the mom, but it didn't really sound
yeah.
like that was a primary focus. And
that, like, they're working on requesting and working on
right.
and with his favorite toys and really playing and having a good time. And, you know, that's what I think is missing in a lot of treatment plans for therapists. And when I was talking on Friday at the Kentucky Speech and Hearing Association, several therapists came up to me afterwards, and they would, this is what the thing would be. It would be, although I'm doing X, Y, and Z, and it would kind of be like with this mom, they would fill in the blank. One lady told me she primarily works in a preschool for autism. She said, and I'm doing my, you know, 1, 2, 3 baskets, and I'm doing my pecs, and I'm doing... we're reinforcing for positive behaviors, and we're doing some ABA. She said, but you know what? I forgot to have fun. I don't think I have fun with any of the kids on my caseload. I don't think they would ever think about me as fun and as being their friend. And I wanted to cry because I thought no matter what else you and I do, our kids think we're there. Well, they think we're too. They think we're there to play with them.
And we are,
and this is the,
which is great.
Yeah, and that this is the best hour they're going to have that week. And our kids cry when we leave, not cry when we get there, which I think is a major difference. And, again, this mom, they may be doing everything right. She just might have – she might be so caught up in, oh, my goodness, he's got hearing loss, and now he might have –
right, and done a lot of research herself. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And we love mommies who worry about their kids because they're our best support
absolutely.
At home because they follow through on what we ask them to
right.
do because they're concerned and they do it. So, you know, that's our ideal mom, really. And we feel for any mom who's worried about her child. We've been there ourselves. But,
yes.
yeah, and she did sound like a very, you know, well-informed, concerned mommy
right.
with her homework. So it could be partly that, and that's a good thing is just to have all that focus on those specific approaches. You know, I think, Laura, it happens a lot that therapists are perhaps used to working in the school system, and they've worked with 6 and 7 and 8 and 9-year-old, however old kids who are apraxic, and then they get to the baby population for whatever reason, and they're still in a lot of ways using the same approaches that are
right.
the go-to approaches for a school-age child, and not
right.
necessarily the go-to approach for a 2-year-old boy. And it doesn't
exactly.
necessarily get translated into what works with a 2-year-old a lot of times.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I spend a lot of time talking to therapists about that and writing about it on the website. And we talk about it every Sunday night at 6 o'clock, how important it is to really realize these are babies and we have to use strategies and treatment approaches that are developmentally appropriate. And so taking some of those clinical approaches, while those strategies might be fine, just the way that you use those and the way that you incorporate those, if that's not part of play, it's not developmentally appropriate for treating language delays in a toddler. And so, again, I know some people are probably shocked that playfulness, I think, is the very first strategy everybody that works in a birth to three program should implement, teaching a parent how to play and how to have a kid really make a social, emotional connection with you. And again, she's already said his receptive language is perfect, and I was kind of waiting for her to say, you know, he followed a few commands, and she said, no, he's following 2 and 3-step commands. Mm-hmm. And to me, on the phone, just listening, it didn't sound like he had too many problems initiating. Did it to you?
No.
And it didn't sound like...
Pretty communicative in his way, yeah, I'd say.
And, you know, and again, we can't hear specific things, but there seemed to be some variability in what he was screaming in the background. It didn't seem to be all or duh-duh or,
wow.
You know, I didn't hear a ton of consonants, but there was some variety there. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, I didn't sit here and phonetically transcribe every time he yelled out, and you certainly am not equipped to do that over the telephone. But at the same time, he's got some real strengths. So I think there, like you said, there's a lot there to work with, and maybe if they can just put the more playful stuff in place, that'll be what he needs to kind of get him over the hump. I hope so. She can call us back in a couple
months.
He's doing better.
Our mantras are mine, and then you usually extrapolate on it, is for kids who appear to be apraxic, and at this point a diagnosis isn't critical by any means. It sounds like
right.
They're doing a lot of the right things, and maybe with a little
right.
tweaking, he may get better before he ever gets an official diagnosis. Excuse
right.
me, that's always what we hope, and we see
yeah.
that on a fairly regular basis, which, you know, whether a child gets a diagnosis or not doesn't really change what we're going to do to help that child, and it's great when they get better before they get a diagnosis. You know, we've done our jobs. That's what we want.
That's how I feel. And when a therapist will call me when, you know, a kid is 4 or 5 or a mom, and they'll say, well, they didn't think he could ever have been apraxic because he's doing so great now. I say, no, that just means we did great. We put the strategies in place that he needed. We overcame that. And we all know just from neurology, and especially these last 10 or 15 years in, you know, brain research, that children's brains are so adaptable between birth to three, and they learn so much in this period, comparatively speaking, to the whole rest of their lives. And so when you can get a kid at 18 months and 24 months and 30 months and really start to target these things, you change his outcome forever. And so when somebody says he couldn't have been apraxic again, I don't look at that like it's a misdiagnosis. I look at it like, boy, we got him at the right time and did the right stuff. And again, a lot of older people, therapists, haven't had the benefit of working with young babies. You know, they might not see them. And again, we don't know how the kid would have been without therapy, because thank goodness his mom didn't choose to do that. So I'm with you on that. I think we sometimes in early intervention, we fix them before they get to somebody else, or the progress, his prognostic kind of outcome is so much better than it would have been had they done nothing, had they waited until 3. And there are still speech pathologists who say you don't need to address these things until 3, and I think that they are really missing an opportunity and really misinforming parents, because they're certainly, you know, that's what we do all day.
And I would say those are therapists who haven't had much success with early, with young children,
right.
because,
yeah.
you know, we couldn't do what we do all day, every day, and not see, wow, does it make a difference for most of the kids
right.
we deal with. But, you know, I can't, I was starting to say, one of my mantras is the heightened arousal level for a kid who appears to be apraxic. He needs to be really mad, really excited, or I'm really scared, and part of the playful approach is to have a child be pretty excited, and that helps kids get words out and get sounds out that they don't ordinarily get at other times at a lower arousal level. And I can't imagine that you could make an approach that was real oral motor based, or approach that was using tons of touch cues, like prompt, as much fun as you could make playing. I just can't imagine that that's possible. So for me, I'd say, stick with the playing.
And, yeah, and he seemed like a pretty excitable little guy.
I bet we could get him to get a lot of words out in an hour.
Yeah, and again, we haven't seen him, so we don't know. And again, the hearing loss piece, though, a lot of people, and I'm not saying that children with even moderate hearing loss in one ear won't have some long-term complications, but because his receptive language is so good, you know he's hearing, you know, he's smart enough to have linked words with meaning, so there is, you know, something beyond the hearing loss, probably. And again, I'm sure there are some people who would really argue with that, and my area of practice is not in treating children with hearing impairments. So again, I'm not, you know, I'm just kind of generalizing here and just kind of talking in plain speak. I'm not talking about specific children and specific blah, blah, blah. So again, hope I don't get any nasty grams about that. but at the same time, because his receptive language is so good, that's a great sign that hearing, you know, hasn't been more of a problem than it could have been. You know, sometimes we do get kids. I had a little guy on the spectrum several years ago. Do you remember this, Kate, or not on the spectrum? He probably is, but he was it was a family who was not from the United States. They were from Pakistan or somewhere, and the mother didn't speak. You know, she spoke in really broken English, and you know, they had some cultural differences, so she didn't really play with them and this, that, and the other. Well, he had gotten a hearing test when he was 2 and failed it and then had no follow-up. And then I saw him right before he turned 3. I mean, I probably had 6 or 8 weeks of therapy. You know, and as we joke all the time, I'm good, but I'm not that good. You know how we say that when we get late referrals? I mean, we really did not have very much time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he got they went ahead, and the pediatrician, when he went ahead and sent the First Steps referral in, the First Steps people started looking through his records and said, oh my goodness, he was referred for an ABR because he failed his audiological screen, and I think he'd failed it a couple of times. And you know, he went a year when he could have been diagnosed with hearing, you know, he was eventually diagnosed with a pretty severe hearing loss. And, you know, he lost that whole year of no services because his dad was just, so angry that that had happened, because he said, if I'd known, I just kept waiting for him to talk. I just kept, you know, the doctor just kept kind of telling me not to worry. He said, if I'd known he'd had hearing loss, and if I had known that that was, you know, the recommendation that he have this test so that we could have identified his hearing loss and put hearing aids on him, you know, where would he have been now? And that makes me so sad when I look at that. So I'm not saying that hearing loss isn't a contributing factor for lots of children, because if you can't hear, of course your language is, you know, going to be impacted. But for this little guy so far, you know, receptively, he's doing great. And my other little friend that I was talking about was not doing great, not following any commands at 3, not understanding anything as he was about to turn 3. So for him, you know, and there were other issues involved as well, but that hearing loss not being identified was a huge, huge, huge big deal for him. Now, I don't know how in the world they ever kept hearing aids on that kid. And, you know, he turned 3 and went to see the preschool people. And I, you know, of course, I had such a short time with his parents that we didn't maintain contact after that. So I don't know how he's doing now. But certainly having that hearing loss identified early would have made, surely would have made some kind of difference for him. So, but that mom's already done that. She's gotten that taken care of. But in my very convoluted way here, I'm still saying his receptive language is good, so at least that's not been affected.
Not too detrimental anyway.
Right.
His receptive skills are age level. He's absorbing, and he has to hear it to absorb it. So.
Right.
Well, we love callers, and I'm glad you gave her the DVD for Apraxia and Phonological Disorders, because I think maybe that is what's going to be most helpful.
Probably so, and I think his therapist thinks that too, or else she wouldn't be doing the things she's doing. So hopefully they can add that play piece in there, and that'll kind of get him over the hump. But I'm glad that you redirected me. That was a good save, Kate.
Trying to be subtle, but you know that's really not my specialty. So
didn't you just want to go, Laura?
Is that what you're going to send her? Which, I mean, that would have worked, really. I mean, because they
well,
won't
I still
get him.
Think it's the best approach because
yes.
I still think if parents don't have that playful stuff down, but she might be the kind of mom that would have watched that first one and said, okay, I need more than this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which a lot of moms will email me and say, okay, I already watched that one, because they'll email me and say, what's your advice for this? And I tell everybody to start with Teach Me to Talk, because I, in my heart of hearts, believe if you're not playing, you're not doing it the right way. And Teach Me to Talk really does drive that point home.
More than any of the others,
foundational
even though you
strategy.
Certainly demonstrate
yeah.
it in all of them, because
right.
you only have a play approach, which is
right.
appropriate. But you're right.
Right.
And maybe you want to rethink it. Talk to her when she emails you and see if...
I know. We'll kind of see. But, you know, we'll just kind of see. I'll decide about that. Who knows? I might send her both.
Oh.
That would really be...
Listeners may want to call in. Laura's feeling especially generous tonight.
Oh, it's the sleep
It was a good kiss show, wasn't it?
It was.
Still on
okay.
cloud nine.
I'm still really basking in the glow of that. That was such fun, but I really do think it's the sleep deprivation tonight. All right, let's move on, because my new friend who is in Western Kentucky, a cute speech therapist named Kim, came to my Louisville conference. And she had emailed me several times before, because she tried to go see me in Evansville when I was there, and she couldn't make it work out with her schedule. And then she tried to go see me in Paducah when I was there, and it didn't work out with her schedule. And then she drove to Louisville, and, you know, it's like 4 hours from where she lives. And remember, that was the day that we were getting all that snow.
Oh.
And so she had to turn around on the Western Kentucky Parkway. Her husband was driving, and he felt like it was too dangerous, so he had to turn around. And so she had to come to the makeup date. So bless her heart, she tried 4 different days to come to the conference, and I'm so glad it finally worked out. But she had talked a bit to me a little bit about this at the end of the conference and asked me this question, and then she sent me she asked me about this little boy and said, what do you think I should do PECs? And I said, yeah, I think you should go ahead and give it a try. So this is what her question is about PECs. She sent me this email today. And the reason we're answering her is because she needs a clear answer before she sees this little boy again this week. So, again, this is from a speech pathologist. She says, thank you again for all the information that you shared in Louisville. I've been adjusting my treatments and short-term goals, and I'm really understanding the relationship between social skills and language development. I was wondering if you could give me some more advice about PECs. And for those of you who are listening, PECs is the Picture Exchange Communication System. It's a pretty structured system in that it's teaching children how to use pictures to communicate, and the people that have developed it have this great training manual. And one of the things they say in the training manual is do not deviate from the training manual. Well, I think that should just be like, you know how you have those sound books for kids, and when you open the book, it says the sentence?
Right.
I think that that should be in the message in this manual when you open it. Do not deviate from this plan, because so many therapists screw it up, don't they?
Right.
When they're teaching PECs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what she says. She says, you know, okay, I started training on phase one 2 weeks ago. And, again, this is a therapist that we had this little mini conversation about how to use PECs. And I'd sent you, there's an article on my website. And the website, I don't think I've said it today, it's teachmetotalk.com. And if you will search in the upper right-hand in the upper right-hand corner, there's a little space for search. If you'll just type in PECs, P-E-C-S, Picture Exchange Communication System, the article will pop up. And I said, Kimberly, take that article and follow that. And so that's what she's doing. And she said, I started training on phase one 2 weeks ago, and I thoroughly explained each step to the child's mom with handouts, and I loaned her my PECs manual. So she did great right from the beginning, giving the mom all the information there. And don't you do that too, Kate, when you have a kid that you're using pictures with? Don't you give mom the manual and or the video to watch?
Yes.
Yeah.
It depends on the mom. If they're readers, they get the manual. If they'd rather watch,
Then
I do the video.
Yeah, so this mom must be a reader, but she may not have the video. But that video is old anyway.
It is very old.
All right. Yeah, and she says, during our practice trials, her first practice trials, the mom wanted to tell her child, pick up the card and give it to Miss Kim. And she says, I explained to mom that she cannot tell her child to pick up the card because then he learns to always depend on her verbal prompt and he won't learn to initiate. And the whole point of PECs is for children learning, okay, I've got to do something to get something, and since I'm not talking yet, I'm going to learn. And most of the time, they recommend this system for children who might be more visual learners, children with receptive language issues, and for children who, again, aren't talking yet. And so you use PECs as a way to teach them, okay, if I give my mom a picture of these cookies, she's going to give me a cookie. If I give her a picture of this milk, she's going to give me milk. And how a lot of therapists screw it up is they'll say to mom, listen, we're going to use pictures, so we need to take all these pictures of everything he likes, and we're going to put them on the fridge. And then when he wants to, when he wants something to eat or drink, you need to say, show me which one you want, and then he'll get it, and everything will be great, and you'll have no more problems, okay? Well, I have never, ever used pictures with a child that it's gone that well in that way. Have you, Kate?
No. If they were that strong of a candidate, they wouldn't need the pictures in the first place.
Right. I could get them talking or signing.
Right.
If they were that smart and had it back together, I would be getting them to talk or sign, not
and initiated that much communication. I mean, a lot of times that's
right.
What you're teaching. Words have power. Words have meaning. I mean, I'd say that's the reason I go to PECs is because I think, okay, whether this child can talk or not, he does not understand the communicative purpose of talking.
Right.
So PECs for visual kids can be really, really useful in teaching that concept. It's very concrete.
Yeah, it makes
very visual.
That's what I was going to say. It makes it really concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, here's a picture of bubbles. And if I give this to my mom, she blows the bubbles. I mean, it's more of not kind of wondering what little sound came out of my mouth that made mommy do that. Or it's just, for some kids, it really fills in that gap and really helps them make the connection. So Kim did a good job at starting with, nope, we're going to follow this manual and we're going to do it like it says. And in phase one of PECs, it's very clear that you use things that the children are highly motivated by. You don't just pick any old toy. You talk with mom about what he really, really likes. And so you pick your motivators or your reinforcers or whatever little word they use. I haven't read that manual in a long time. But you pick whatever that is. You take pictures of those. And then you teach them how to trade in very structured tasks, meaning that there are always two adults. There's one adult that's the helper, and she helps the kid learn to trade the picture. And by that, I mean she physically takes the child's hand, puts it down, grabs the picture, and places it in the other adult's hand, who is sitting there really saying nothing except the name of the reinforcer or motivator. And so if this kid were using crackers, she would say, crackers, woo, crackers. And again, that's putting the whole excited sing-song voice, you know, make you want a requested spin on that. And so Kim is saying what's happening is the mother is sitting and over-talking through this. She's telling her child, oh, you have to pick it up and give it to Miss Kim. And the PECs manual clearly says, do not say that. Let them learn just through your actions that he's going to pick up the card and give it. And the theory, again, is that for lots of these children that words have no meaning yet, and you're almost just kind of overstimulating them and crowding out the whole intent of the activity when you talk too much through it. And I think that happens a lot. Haven't you seen that happen a lot, Kate?
Absolutely. For kids who,
yeah.
Words, I think they just hear garbledygook, wah, wah, wah,
yeah.
And they tune out.
Charlie
so
Brown teacher.
You're defeating the whole purpose of the exercise before you ever let them really learn how meaningful words can be. Just shuts them down.
Right, and so she says, I reminded her that the helper is supposed to only provide physical assistance with no talking. And boy, is that hard for moms to do. It's hard for chatty speech pathologists to do, too, because I now have to put my hand over my mouth to keep me from
saying
talking.
Too much.
Yeah, you do naturally want to say, okay, pick up the card, pick up the card, pick up the card. But when you do that, you just negate all of what PECs is supposed to be about. So she's done a good job. She's reminding the mother not to say that. She's not to say, do you, you know, all these other things. And she said, Mom has realized that her child constantly depends on her, and he never initiates communication about his needs because she's always asking him first, do you want this? And Kim says that she demonstrated all the steps to phase one and asked Mom to practice with another family member when another family member's home. She said, I came back the following week and asked how practice with PEX went. So she did a good job. As soon as she got there, she asked about the homework, which is something I'm always harping on. And she said that the mom says when a family member tries to physically help the child pick up the card, he starts crying and he gets really upset. And Kim says, at first, I thought he was crying because of sensory issues, you know, the kids who don't like to be touched, and how the laminated picture feels. So she thought that was kind of an icky texture for him. But Mom doesn't feel like that. She thinks that it's just because he doesn't want somebody else to help him, because she says that he only picks up the picture when he's told to pick up the picture. And so she's saying, what would you do? Her idea is this week she's going to be the helper, excuse me, with the kid. So Mom is going to be the one sitting there with her hand out, you know, being the, I guess, I have a, what's
facilitator,
the official term? I think it is facilitator. I think it is. But she's going to be the one sitting there, which is great, because that's usually what happens in the real world or real life. Anyway, it'll be Mommy who's giving him the stuff, and the speech pathologist is going to be the helper. And she said she's going to have, oh, Kim says she's going to have Mom be the communicative partner. That probably is what it's called. I don't know. She says, to see if he will let me help him. Do you have any other suggestions? So here's where we are with that. My suggestions were, first of all, I think that's a great idea for her to switch being, and her be the helper and Mom be the other person, the giver.
So she can model how quiet really is.
Right, which means nothing.
Quiet.
And if she's coaching, it should be coaching that mom going, shh, or, you know, only say this. Only say.
Zipper sign by her lips.
Yeah. And this is what I told Kim, too. I bet the problem has been that it's not been fun enough when they've practiced at home, and that's probably why he's crying. That would be my take on it, that it's been, okay, we're going to do this picture stuff now. You know, and again, I don't know this mom. That could not be the case, but that's usually what's happened. Somebody's kind of ruined it for him, because otherwise Kim would have seen that behavior in therapy the first time they did it, and she didn't see any of that. The crying stuff didn't start until they practiced at home.
Practice. Now,
so,
I will say this, Laura. Sometimes kids are almost more sensitive, particularly with their mommies or grandmas.
Yeah, I think they
spend a whole lot of time with grandma. But normally it's mommy,
right.
And I always say that's the curse of being a mother. You get their worst and you get their best.
Isn't that the truth?
It's the truth. That's just the reality of motherhood. And for some kids, particularly those kids who are very used to being catered to, and it does kind of this the way that Kim, is that the speech therapist's name?
Uh-huh.
The way she
yeah.
describes the mom as giving everything to the child, offering, you know,
right.
kind of anticipating the child's needs and meeting them before the child may even realize he had a need.
Mm-hmm.
Those kids who are very complacent and agreeable about taking all of that help, sometimes when they're encouraged to be a little bit more independent, even if that independence is just picking up a picture and handing it to somebody, they balk. And they really
their feelings
balk
are hurt.
Yeah. They, like, what's wrong with this picture? My mommy does it for me, and you're making me do this. And on some level, although they may not really understand the dynamics, they understand the status quo has changed here. I'm being forced to do something, and I don't necessarily like it. And they fall apart.
Right.
And those same kids, oftentimes, if we're working with them and we are really playful and we are really using things that they love, they are a little bit more tolerant of us really demanding some input and effort on their part, because they're not as comfortable with us. You know, we want them to love
right.
us, but they know in their hearts that mommy's number one, and they can be a little bit more sensitive with mom. So normally, if we can, you know, turn it around and break the ice, I think her being the helper is great, because he's less likely to balk with that. Yeah, he's probably going to be.
And I think she needs. Yeah, and I think the other thing she needs to do is really take a good look at what motivators they're using. If he
right.
doesn't really want it, he might just fall back to crying, like, "Well, this is not motivating enough for me. This is not that big of a deal for me." and he kind of is thinking about, oh my gosh, you've crushed my feelings here, or you've made me really mad, rather than, oh, I really want that, and I'm really,
right.
really going to work for what that
it's,
is.
It's worth a little discomfort or a little more effort if I get what I want. I will say, Laura, we like, especially with a child who sounds kind of like this child does, I like a food approach, but I have had a handful
yeah.
of kids that if I used food, that was even more threatening than
right.
some toy or some objects that they loved. And I've had to back off of using food to kind of teach that first step. And then
first,
once
yeah.
you're comfortable, you can move to food. But some kids, even whether you're using signs or a picture or whatever, you know, mode to encourage increased communication, food usually is a great thing to start with. Most kids are highly motivated by it. They really
yeah.
want it, and they'll work for it. That's the truth.
Right.
A handful of kids fall to pieces when they think they're not going
right.
to get their cracker because
right.
it's being withheld. So.
And in that case, when she's being the helper, then she just needs to, I mean, before he even can start to cry, she needs to take that little hand, pop it on that picture, pop it in Mom's hand, and Mom immediately give that food before he even thinks
has
about
a thought
crying.
Of not getting that cracker. Yeah, he needs to
yeah.
know real quick that he's going to get his reward.
That he's going to get it. But he's got to do it. He's got to do it. I mean, I wouldn't just sit there and go, oh, he's going to cry. Let me go ahead and give him 15 Teddy Grahams. Well, then you've taken
the whole
motivating piece out. Yeah, and I know you would never do that. I'm just talking about.
Right.
I'm just talking about ways people can screw it up, because goodness knows there are.
It's okay. He's learning. He's trying. He's still learning. My sarcastic response, yeah, learning to not like his therapist, learning to throw a fit when he gets upset, learning. Some therapists will say that. It's okay. He's trying. He's still learning. And
we're not going with that.
We like a smile on our kids' faces. We think we learn better when we're happy. So, and I do. I know I do. And I think that kids... young children certainly do so. We like to keep them happy, but a little moment of discomfort. But Laura's right. Keep it as short and sweet and
don't let him get all crying and pouty, which
right.
it sounds like he kind of
goes
to pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't do that. Just get in there and kind of get it done. And what I would do is probably play with things that he really, really likes first. Don't walk in and start with pecs right off the bat.
Right, you want him happy when you start.
I would get the kid darn happy
mm-hmm.
before we did it. And I would have it be, you know, after he's smiling and after he's having a great time with you, and I wouldn't over talk to Mom about it. You know, oh, gosh, the pictures didn't go so great. Oh, what are we going to do? I wouldn't even do a lot of that. And, again, it doesn't say how great this kid's receptive language is. It's probably not too super. But some kids even kind of pick up on that and start the whole, I'm going to cuddle in my mommy's lap, and I'm going to get real shy here. My thumb goes in my mouth, and I'm going to snuggle down. Even when they're hearing you kind of talk about stuff like that, haven't you had that happen before?
Mm-hmm.
And so she does not want to do that either. She needs to go in and play, and have it just be a really fun session. And even if they don't get to pecs until the last, you know, half or the last quarter of the session, that's okay, because she needs him in a just right place before they try it again, because he's obviously gotten some negative feelings or, you know, that emotionality piece. He's gotten that connected with that because he's crying when somebody tries to help him. So she needs to kind of break that cycle, too, and really play and have a good time and then kind of throw pecs in there when he's in a good place and is less
right. And it doesn't sound
fall
like
apart.
This is going to be a child where it's going to take a very concerted, focused effort to get him through, you know, to using pecs functionally. So if it's 15 minutes at the end and it's positive, that is a great 15 minutes. That beats an hour of... he's miserable, Mom's squirming, and
yeah.
the therapist doesn't know what to do next. So,
right.
You're
and I do
right.
think that it could take him a little while to learn this, though, just kind of based on what she had said about all the different other things that she had tried.
Right.
So it may have to be the last 15 minutes of woohoo fun session for weeks before, just kind of based on what she said and that. You know, just kind of some other things. And again, I might have my kids mixed up here. It could have been somebody totally different that said something like this, or it could have been, you know, she was talking about a totally different kid than what she's talking about here. Again, I am not privy to all that information, but even if it does take him a while to learn it, it would be much more productive, like you were just saying, to have 15 minutes of good practice rather than a struggle for a whole hour to get them to do it. So get them in that just right place first. Some kids will do food, like Kate said. Some kids will work better for a toy. Some kids, you have to go to that movement kind of game. Before they're really going to learn that, I have to do something to get something, but that is really hard with text because the whole point of that is taking a picture of what the activity is, and it's really hard to kind of picture turning a flip or jumping or something like that. But if all else fails, she should go to that whole preferred movement activity thing, but she's going to have to be a little bit more creative about how she represents that on a picture, and that probably would be a stretch for lots of kids to understand.
Right.
But sometimes you do have kids that, and if that's the case, I would just probably stick to using a sign for that sort of thing. But I think this kid, if it's the same kind of kid, has had a lot of trouble using signs in that he'll do it great for, you know, a week and then no more. And so that's kind of why she's decided to go to PECS, to make sure that he's really making that connection between doing something and getting something.
Sometimes that's the hardest piece to teach. Not with every child, but sometimes it is. And
yeah,
PECS can be a great facilitator for that, I have found.
Yeah, and but this therapist is so sweet, and I just think she's got the right idea, and her heart's in the right place with really looking for ways, and she certainly has gone about teaching PECS in the right way with mom, and this mom sounds like a great mom too. It's with, you know, oh, I'm gonna take care of him, and, you know, she's a good mommy. It's never the moms that don't take really good care of their kids who kind of over or never give their kids a chance to initiate. And the truth is, and you always say that phrase, Kate, the truth is, if he were going to initiate on his own, he would have already figured out how to do it. So it's not necessarily this mom's fault, per se. You know, if he were typical with his language development, his communication development, he would have already started initiating a lot more on
his
own than he was.
Trying to anticipate every need that child has would not squelch his desire to communicate. And the reason that we were supposed to address that weeks ago, Laura, because sometimes therapists still kind of put that in mom's laps and
yeah.
they'll say, well, if you gave him a reason to communicate, he would. And
right.
And I think that would be better stated. There are things
in
you
a different
could be
way.
Doing now that would be would inspire or help your child to be more communicative, but not to say that because you're such a good mommy, your child doesn't talk, which is, I think, the message some parents unfortunately get.
Well,
you just do everything for him, and so
yeah,
he doesn't talk.
And those really ultra-good mommies are the ones who internalize every little amount of every even hint of something that could be turned around into maternal guilt.
Right.
They kind of had that in overdrive anyway.
And so often you would rather think they did something wrong than there is an issue with their child. And I get that.
Right.
But I also don't like when therapists make them feel like, well, it's all my fault. I did everything. I was a good mommy, but really what they say is, well, you anticipate his every need. And you know what I would say? If you were communicating typically, you cannot anticipate a two-year-old's every need because, by gum, you give them the red cup and they want the blue cup. You give them the blue cup and they want the door cup. Give them the door. That's what they want, to have control over their environments. And even the best mother cannot anticipate 100% of what a two-year-old wants. You know, they're going to come through and share with you in some way, shape, or form that you've done something wrong and you need to fix it. And so
and that continues throughout your history.
That's pretty much being a mommy. That's the mommy side. So seriously though, I just think, don't make that mom feel like it's her fault. You know, are there things the mom could tweak now that would help? Yes. But it's not her fault. You know, she talks to her kid constantly. She waits on him hand and foot. She's a great mom. Don't make great moms feel like it's their fault. I don't believe it. It's not really true.
I don't either. And I do think that's what happens a lot, is that we take, as a profession, we take a little bit of what might be 1/15th of a contributing factor to the kid's problem, because usually there's an underlying issue, or even if the mom were ultra doting, the kid would have already overcome it if that were the only reason. And that's how I feel about lots of things that therapists seem to kind of harp on. Pacifiers.
Right.
You know, lots of things like
might
that.
Might be
that you
one
think, okay,
little small piece, but there is some underlying issue.
Right.
That
bigger issue, yeah.
Yes, that could not possibly be reduced to you met his every need. So.
Right. Exactly.
But, so anyway.
Exactly.
Good luck to Kim.
All
I
right.
think she's on a great track with the PECs. And hopefully she'll let us know that it's getting them somewhere.
I hope so, too. Okay, next week we're really going to address these two moms that I swore we would get to today.
So
I know. I'm sorry. I was looking for their names. One mom's name's Michelle, and one mom's name is Angela. So, Michelle and Angela, I sincerely apologize, and we will get to your questions next week. Which means that we will, the week after that is when we'll be doing the show with how to pick a good speech therapist. What are things you look for? So we'll do that that next week. So happy Valentine's Day. If anybody is listening today or tomorrow, when they listen to the show 6 months from now, that'll seem kind of out of place. But that's
2011.
Okay.
For those people who found us way after the beginning, we just recently got an email that said she, I don't know how she described herself, but she was a cute, was she from South Africa?
She's from South Africa, and she was so cute when she said she had to start, she has to start at the beginning
very,
with everything.
I don't know, OCD or very anal or very structured or something, and she had to start from the first show, so she's listening to Laura going to college, and she's a junior now. So there you go. Time goes forward.
I know. So she'll get to the show in another year probably, but I do think she's doing them pretty quickly because she was – I think she's doing them quickly. But hopefully she'll get to this and even recognize herself. I think her name was – oh, I don't remember. It
don't
started
remember.
With a D.
I like your line about she's attending the Laura Mize University, which I've been joking about for many years. I'm the charter member. I was her first pupil 12 years ago. I was her little grasshopper. So, but, you know, lots of people are beginning to feel that way, Laura, and that's awesome.
I know. It's very sweet. And I'm very flattered and very grateful. And my whole goal is, wow, what a difference we get to make, even on this show that kind of started out like, okay, we're just going to talk like we talk every day.
For a lady in South Africa, who knew? She was cute. She wrote that she said her program was great, but they didn't really teach early intervention. And their answer to early speech with toddlers was to tell them to read the Rossetti book.
Oh, isn't that sad? And I'm so glad that we've been able to be a resource. And this is my big point, and this is what I nearly tear up about when I think about it. I love to work with kids, and I love to work with families. But, boy, when I can help a therapist be better, that's going to impact kids and parents that I would never, ever get a chance to meet. I mean, parents that may not ever have gone on the website and have read these things for themselves. But if you can make a difference in how a therapist practices, especially when they're young and just beginning their career, we might change the outcomes of children for years to come.
Yeah.
If she has a long,
long
and lively
long
career.
Past the time we're able to get up and off their living room floors.
I know, and we would never see children in South Africa and in all, and in just, you know, the parents that she, the family she may serve, may have never stumbled upon my website and our little show here. So she, you know, learning these things and knowing these things now, you know, what an impact that makes. And that's just what makes me feel so incredibly blessed every single day that I get the opportunity to do this. So
yeah, that's cool.
Anyway, we'll end on that note. Yeah, it is pretty cool. And thanks for hanging in here with me and doing the show, Kate. I don't even really have to beg you to do it anymore. It's
well,
really
I like
good.
The way that everybody writes. She says, "Dear Laura," parentheses, "and Kate." Don't think I don't appreciate my parentheses and Kate, because I do. And when my
well,
South African friend gets to this, she'll know I appreciated being included on that letter.
I
even if
edit
it's
that
formality,
better.
I like it.
Well, I don't want it to hurt your feelings. I'm going to start editing that. I never even thought about that. But
oh,
I'm
no,
sorry.
No, I don't care. I'm serious. I'm glad I'm on there. I mean, I think they know that you're really giving the responses as far as what you do on the website and everything, and so it's appropriate. I those make my night. You know, when you send me those emails, I think, oh, a lady from South Africa listens to our show. Who would have believed it? So So
I know.
Keep listening.
I know.
We enjoy the feedback and knowing that you may take something useful and use it with a child you're seeing.
I know.
Or,
that's pretty cool.
Or parenting.
Yeah, pretty cool, pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for this week. Join us next Sunday night at 6 o'clock. Thanks.
Oh, thank you. Bye.
Bye.